This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. At the intersection of Lufortin and Military Drive at what used to be called Lackland Air Force Base, but it's now Joint Base San Antonio, lies the Texas Cryptology Center. It's a huge building enshrouded in mystery, operated by the NSA. The general function of the spy center was unknown until fairly recently. In fact, one of the only public statements released from the center was in response to signals about emancipating from the building, which was interfering with garage door openers in the neighborhood. Now, infamous NSA contractor Edward Snowden revealed that the agency has created, through the use of the Patriot Act, a vast and sophisticated network of surveillance under the code name of PRISM. This project allowed the collection of personal data from some of the Internet's most frequent sites. Companies like Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Microsoft, and Skype were all participants. It later broke that the NSA was also monitoring vast quantities of phone calls. This was all done under the guise of the national security and preventing terrorism, and part of it was happening right here in San Antonio at that center at the intersection of 410 and Military Drive. Now we're learning that the NSA data collection also included the heads of governments friendly to the United States. That included Mexico, Brazil, Germany, and France. This half hour, we're going to be joined by Charles Cuphan. He is a professor of political science at Georgetown and the former director of European affairs at the National Security Council under Bill Clinton. And also being joined by Cynthia Arson. She's the director of the National Latin American Center at the Wilson International Center for Scholars. And you're invited to join. The conversation. You can call in at 614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. Now let's kick off our conversation with Professor Cuphan. Do the heads of the governments that are of our allies, were they really surprised to find out that they were being spied on by the United States?
No, I don't think they're surprised because they're probably spying on us. They're spying on each other. When they come into the office in the morning, one of the first things that they get as the head of government or head of state is an intelligence briefing, and some of that intelligence will have been collected by their intelligence agencies against friends. Now, they do need to express dismay that this is happening because it alienates people, it creates a certain level of public outrage, and I think, you know, the normal citizens don't really understand why is America spying on its best friends. And the answer is because that's what intelligence agencies do. But I think for many people, that isn't a sufficient answer. So what we've seen is a lot of statements of condemnation, a call for the United States to sit down with the Germans and the French and others and devise a new protocol about espionage. But we haven't seen that many actual steps of retaliation, I think, because ultimately these leaders know that this stuff goes on a daily basis.
So this is more a domestic issue for each of these countries where no one wants to appear before their own political, you know, constituency as being a stooge for the United States.
Not so much a stooge for the United States. And I wouldn't want to suggest that the leaders kind of approve of this or like it, but the general, I think it's safe to say that the public statements of condemnation, having the French foreign ministry call in the American ambassador, generally this is more political theater than it is substance. The one place where we're actually seeing some action taken is in the European Parliament, where a committee just in the past couple of days passed legislation to tighten privacy data rules within the European Union. And if that bill passes the European Parliament, which it probably will, then fines would be imposed on Internet providers that do not ascribe to what will be fairly stringent rules that would prevent the NSA from being able to ask Internet providers for data.
The United States has enjoyed a tremendous technological advantage over many countries because the United States, you know, invented the Internet thanks to Al Gore and his friends. And so are we going to have to give some of that up because they're going to have to figure out how to create their own Internet, don't have and secure it from the United States?
That's unlikely to be the case, and partly because it's very difficult to do. We have seen some companies in Germany in particular attempt to take advantage of this NSA scandal by saying to potential customers, look, we have our own servers. You will be able to send and receive email without going through servers or internet conduits that the NSA has access to, i.e., move to us and we'll protect your privacy. But, you know, it's difficult to kind of create these closed networks. Many Europeans go to Google. They have Facebook accounts, and they do other kinds of internet activities. They're going to put them out into a domain in which this kind of espionage takes place.
So the phone number is 614-8980 if you want to join the conversation talking about the NSA and recent revelations that there was our government was spying on other governments, which is really not that big of a revelation, according to Professor Kupchan. Don't they use like encrypted messages? Are we able to crack those things? Is that the big news, that even their encrypted messages weren't good enough to withstand our NSA probes?
That's pretty much the case. I mean, one of the things that the NSA does, in addition to vacuuming up email and call logs and all kinds of other forms of data, is to work hard on encryption. So they focus on the different types of encryption that different companies and different internet providers are using. I'm not a specialist in this, so I can't tell you whether there are certain encryption companies or encryption styles that the NSA has yet to master. But the bottom line is that when you or me or others around us are on a day-to-day basis on the phone or sending emails or talking on a radio program, if the NSA wants to listen in, they can do it.
Yeah, they have lots of tools, lots of tricks. Okay, we're going to continue this conversation in just a minute. We're talking about the NSA and their spying program and how they have been looking at the heads of states of some of our allies. And there have been questions about whether or not this is going to interfere with our diplomatic relationships with them. You're welcome to call and join the conversation. The number is 614-8980, or send your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the domestic spying and the international spying program for the NSA and how they've been tapping into the internet and grabbing vast amounts of data, and not just from people who they suspect of terrorism, but also of some of our best friends and leaders of countries, of our allies. We've been talking with Charles Kupchan. He's a professor of political science at Georgetown and former director of the European Affairs at the National Security Council under Bill Clinton. Also, now we're joined by Cynthia Arson. She is director of Latin American Center at the Wilson International Center for Scholars. And so, Ms. Arson, let me ask you about Mexico. So now, okay, so we don't have her just yet, but we expect to get her in just a bit. Let me get the caller on the line. Our phone number is 614-8980. And if you want to join the conversation, please do. Here's Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? You know, I was just going to basically say, you know, I wasn't really surprised about the government spying on our allies. You know, for multiple reasons. You know, one, there is a lot of intel isn't shared between the countries or through the governments. I mean, a lot of intel isn't shared through our own government. And, you know, when you have internet providers, you know, and if you're using search engines, you know, whether it be Google or Bing or whatever, they're doing a type of data mining on you anyhow. So how could we expect anything different from the government? But my only real question would be is how come, I guess, the Obama administration is taking more of a heat when they're using the Patriot Act, which was sort of enforced by the Bush administration?
All right, Michael, thank you for that question. And Professor Kupchan, can you address that? Is this an Obama problem?
Well, it's, you know, I think it's important to put the whole spying issue in a broader context, because the public outrage and the pushback that you're getting from Europe is not just about the NSA and about espionage. I think it also stems from, number one, general disappointment with the Obama administration on broader foreign policy issues. Your caller, Mike, just mentioned the drone issue, and many Europeans feel that the drone strikes in Pakistan and elsewhere are illegal. Then we have the detainee issue. Obama said he was going to close Guantanamo. He's making another try to do so, but Europeans are a little bit disgruntled about that. And so this whole question of the NSA scandal is part of that general disgruntlement. And then the other is, I think it's important that to point out that Europeans are more sensitive to this issue than Americans are. We've read Orwell. We talk in this country about Big Brother, but generally we haven't lived through periods, except short periods of war, where we actually face Big Brother. Well, the Europeans have. Germany in particular, the Italians, all of Central Europe used to live within the Soviet bloc, where you couldn't say boo without somebody listening to you or informing on you. And so European history has to be factored into the way that Europeans are responding.
Now, a lot of this information is coming via Edward Snowden, who was a contractor for the NSA, and he leaked all this information. Is this damaging information? Is this something that Edward Snowden can be accused of hurting the United States by releasing?
That, I think, is a difficult question to answer because, you know, you have to sort of be on the inside to know what kinds of revelations he has made that have compromised intelligence. I think it's safe to say that it is damaging, that it has compromised sources, that it makes, as did the WikiLeaks disclosure, it makes others out in the field less inclined to open up to the United States. And probably most importantly, it has cost the United States in terms of reputation. It has set people on edge. But in terms of specific intelligence breaches, I'm unable to speak to that or to point to ways in which disclosures have come back to really harm American security.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. It's 614-8980, 614-8980. San Antonio is playing a major role in this NSA spying scandal with a large facility here in the city, which is being used to monitor and gather data from our foreign diplomatic outpost. And now we are joined by Cynthia Arson, and she is the director of the Latin American Centers at the Wilson International Center for Scholars. And so, Ms. Arnson, can I ask you, you know, Mexico, the United States has a history of interfering with Mexico, and is this playing as a much bigger story there than maybe we realize?
Well, I think it's, you know, Mexico has a long history also of security cooperation with the United States and an increasing level of close cooperation, sharing of intelligence on issues of organized crime. So historically, although U.S. involvement in Mexico is sensitive very politically, over the last two administrations, there's been, you know, a very, very close relationship. And I think the difficulty and the damage really is in the sort of the scope of the spying. It's one thing to maintain the argument that this was intended to protect people in the United States as well as in the Americas against acts of terrorism, and it doesn't really jive to then have hacked, you know, the email account of then presidential candidate, now president, Enrique Peña Nieto, or to have done the same to the former president, Felipe Calderón. And the same sort of thing happened in Brazil. It's one thing to want to find out information that could pose a potential threat to lives and U.S. interests. It's another thing to be spying on the president herself and on the principal oil company, Petrobras, during a period of very delicate negotiations with international oil companies over access to the pre-salt oil field. So, you know, there, the national security justification for this kind of broad sweep is difficult to maintain, and I think what's getting a response is the political embarrassment factor, you know, about the sort of the scope and also the targets of the U.S. surveillance.
It seems like the United States was very interested in Pinheiro's actual thoughts and feelings about how well he would prosecute the drug war in Mexico, because there's been a lot of doubt about whether or not he was going to pull back or if he was going to double down, and it seems that was where a lot of interest was.
Well, it's clearly, I think, of interest to know whether the PRI, which had governed Mexico for so many decades and had a fairly distant relationship with the United States, whether Peña Nieto was going to revert back to the kind of default position of resisting foreign intervention and particularly U.S. intervention. So, you know, there is clearly a political interest in knowing what he's thinking. But I think it's just, you know, in light of the Cold War, in light of the sort of heavy baggage of in a country like Brazil, of military dictatorship, you know, where militaries in collaboration with U.S. intelligence forces are spying on people and it has an overtly political, aspect. It brings up, again, in Brazil more than in a country like Mexico, all of these kind of all of this baggage from the past. And I don't think we should be so naive to think that, countries don't gather intelligence on one another and that allies aren't constantly trying to find out, you know, what the other is thinking and not just saying publicly, but what they're actually saying. But I think it does give offense when major political figures are the target of intelligence operations by the U.S. government, and that the whole of society, has been vacuum cleaned, to use that metaphor, in terms of all of the kinds of communications, emails, telephone conversations that take place. I mean, in the same way that there's a lot of questioning in the United States about the scope and whether this kind of metadata, what sort of privacy issues, what sorts of civil liberties issues. I mean, that's the debate in this country. It shouldn't surprise us that it's a debate in other countries of Latin America.
Yeah, but here in the United States, it's a constitutional debate or a right to privacy, and I think the attitude is that once they leave the borders, they're able to do a lot more than they can domestically, or at least in theory, or at least they tell us they do. We don't know for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, in theory, you know, the intelligence community is not supposed to spy on U.S. citizens. That's always been sort of a sharp division in the wake of all of the political scandals around the FBI spying on Martin Luther King and that kind of thing. There was sort of a distinction made about what was a legitimate function of the intelligence community, what was a legitimate function, you know, of internal security bodies like the FBI. Overseas, there's never been, as far as I can tell, a very narrow definition of what constitutes a legitimate target of U.S. intelligence. And I think what we're seeing in the Snowden affair is mostly, you know, kind of the embarrassment factor. Not that that governments are necessarily surprised, but that it becomes public, and that the U.S. had so little control, really, over the use of these outside contractors and the kinds of security clearances that they had and the access that they had, and then, you know, their ability to damage U.S. intelligence operations through all of these massive revelations. So, I think there is, just a kind of a sense that the United States should not be snooping into private emails and private telephone conversations of millions of people in a country who have no involvement whatsoever in illegal activity, let alone anything that could pose a threat to anyone. And so, again, it's the scope, and it's the fact that this is directed at close U.S. allies and people with whom the United States has a close working relationship and a relationship, sometimes of more or less distance, but essentially of trust ever more so in recent years.
So let me ask Professor Kupchan. Earlier we had the Manning leaks of cables, the diplomatic cables, and those were embarrassing, but we got over that, right? That wasn't a something that changed our diplomatic relations severely, right?
I wouldn't say that it had no impact. I mean, just talking to friends of mine that are in the diplomatic corps, they do find that when they go out on post, they don't have people disclosing information in the same way that they used to. They find it harder to get good sources, and I think that's partly because sources are now afraid that what they say is going to show up in a cable that gets released to the public. This Snowden affair is in some ways more difficult to control because it's in the public domain, because it's not just diplomats talking to diplomats and sending a cable right back to Washington. It's the NSA shoveling up and vacuuming in millions and millions of phone calls and internet
right
by normal
people. We're out of time, but Professor Kupchan, thank you so much. And Cynthia Arson, thank you so much. This is The Source on KSTX.